I know I'm gonna get got. But I'm gonna get mine more than I get got, though.
What is good, everyone? We are back for another episode of Lock It or Leave It. Great pod coming up, so we'll just get right into it. I'm your host, Jay, and as usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Cam. What is going on, man?
What's up, Jay? I can't believe we've done 25 episodes now. We've got some more great content coming at you guys, and I'm excited to get into this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just introduce our first guest, Aaron. Aaron, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Been a lot of stuff going on in the sports world lately. Some pretty exciting stuff in the NBA, but as you guys know, we haven't done a whole lot of baseball content in the past. We're kind of shifting towards that now. We're going to do some stuff now that baseball season's in full swing, both professional and college. And so we have a very special guest on today. He is the catcher for the Florida State baseball team. This guy Rakes. Big welcome to Matt Nelson. Matt, how you doing today?
Good. Appreciate you guys having me on today.
Yes, sir. Of course. So a little background. Me and Matt actually used to play travel ball together back in the day for the Gulf Coast Mustangs. He's from Largo, Florida, the same area as me and Cam. We went to rival high schools, and he went to Calvary Christian, where he started immediately as a freshman. Calvary's historically a very good program. Played with a lot of other D1 and pro players like Johnny Schneider, Graham Hoffman, Eric Kennedy, Justin Bench, Christian Cairo, and Tommy White, just to name a few. 2017, they were 30-0, state champions, undefeated season. The next year, they almost went back-to-back. They were 30-1 in 2018. The only loss was in the state title game. Matt, what was it like during that huge win streak? What were you guys seeing out there, and how was the team feeling?
I don't even think the team was worried about the win streak because there was a lot of close games, and probably the closest game we played was in the district semifinal against Tampa Catholic that one year when my now teammate Connor Grady started against us, and he went a complete game in seven innings, and then eventually we just walked it off with one out and a runner on third on a single little base hit. So, I mean, the guys were never focused on the win streak. They were just more so there for each other and just wanted to play the best they could every single day.
So, like I said, Calvary has become a national powerhouse now. They were ranked in the top 25 in the country both of those years I talked about, and they are again this year with a big game against Jesuit coming up tomorrow. Seeing Calvary the way it is now, what do you think led to this rise, and how did you help contribute to it?
I think it was more so because I think it's more so Coach Olson than anything, because Coach Olson was at Seminole, and then once he came over to Calvary Christian, they finally developed the baseball team. He was the head coach there for 6 years before I even – you know, arrived there as a freshman. And so getting to know Coach Olson and him really learning the players and getting to know the players and really caring about each player individually as a person rather than how they perform on the field, I think really contributed to how we play together as a team and our success, because the way he showed that he cared about us made us care about everybody else just the same.
Yeah, so shout out Coach Olson. You had to put up big numbers in high school, career slash line, .384 batting average, .511 OBP, 696 slugging with 15 home runs. Great numbers. One of your assistant coaches at Calvary was the late, great Roy Doc Holliday. Rest in peace. How did he influence you and the rest of the team during your time with him?
He was just another one of us. I mean, he kind of acted like a kid half the time. He'd heckle the other team. He'd heckle the other coaches. I mean, he'd be right in there with us. So, I mean, he actually kind of gave us the leeway just to open our mouths a little bit and get in somebody's butt. So
me and Cam are both Indian Rocks alums. We got to ask, you got any memories, good or bad, playing against Indian Rocks in your time at Calvary?
Good or bad? Bad memory. Freshman year district final at St. Pete Catholic High School. I think we lost on a walk-off base hit or something like that.
Yeah, it was a fly ball right center field. Yep, that's
correct. Something like that. And then when else was it? Same year. Because runner-up and finalists still move on. And I think it was the regional semifinal, too. Played you guys at home, lost that one. So both bad memories, but then good memories when we moved up to 4A and everything else kind of dwindled in there.
Yeah, you guys got us pretty good the couple years after that. So I think it's all even.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the numbers speak for themselves there, obviously. But so you were the number two ranked catcher in the state of Florida. You got drafted out of high school by the Philadelphia Phillies. Could you talk a little bit about your experience getting drafted and ultimately what led you to choosing the college route over pros?
Yeah, no, so I had talked to the Phillies previously, and it was more so they had a first overall pick, or not a first overall pick, I'm sorry, a first round draft pick. And Their second pick wasn't until the fifth round. And, you know, to give up the Florida State experience and the college education and what this program stands for, it kind of be a no-brainer to go to college rather than take the fifth round money instead. And, I mean, they did a hell of a job because they took Alec Bohm that year. He, you know, playing in the bigs, making huge contributions to the team. And I was actually in the middle of a summer league. I was playing in the South Florida Collegiate League for the Lightning, the Delray Lightning. And I was in the middle of a game, and my dad comes walking over to me and goes, "Well, you did it. What are you talking about, man?" He's like, "Oh, you got drafted in the 39th round by the Phillies." I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." So I walk over and I just check my phone because I'd already made up my decision that I was going to Florida State at the time. And I walk over, I check my phone, and it's just blowing up. So that was a pretty cool moment for the night. But, you know, the next day, because I knew I was going to college the next week for summer classes, so that was pretty cool for the experience. But overall, you know, nothing bad to say about it.
We do have to ask, though, did Philly offer you any kind of signing bonus? And was it hard to give up that kind of money as an 18-year-old kid in high school?
No, they didn't really offer any signing bonus. It was more so, hey, our next pick isn't until the fifth round, and we kind of want to stay with Slot. And Slot at the time was $500,000, and it was just, you know, $500,000 or Florida State baseball. Luckily, I went to Florida State, stayed with my commitment because I had committed my freshman year of high school to Florida State. And, you know, next thing you know, we end up going to Omaha, and I got to play under 11 for one last year, and that's an experience I would never give up.
Yeah, man. So you started as a freshman in 2019 and you had a big freshman year at Florida State when you hit six homers, you had an 885 OPS. And for the listeners back home, that's on base plus slugging percentage. So your clutch postseason performance included two hits in the super regional clinching win over LSU and another two hits in the win over Arkansas in the first game of the College World Series in Omaha. Every young ball player, it seems like, dreams of playing in Omaha. Can you talk to us about that experience of going there and what it was like to play against the best teams in baseball on the biggest stage?
Yeah, it was actually pretty awesome because Sherman Johnson, he's in the Reds organization. He used to play at Florida State. He was a true walk-on. He had gone to Omaha once or twice. I know he went once for sure. But, you know, me and Sherman talk, and I met him at a father-son camp with David Ross, and we were out eating afterwards, and we were talking about Omaha. And I was like, "Hey, Sherm, you know, were you nervous playing in Omaha?" "No, I don't get nervous." I'm like, "Sherm, come on, man. Like, it's Omaha. That place has got to be electric." He said, "Not like you think." He goes, "It's loud, but it's not that loud." And I'm just sitting here, I'm thinking, and this is, you know, before freshman year even starts, before spring season even starts. And I'm just sitting here, I'm like, "Dude, you're out of your mind. Like, you just got to be a different breed." We go into the Georgia Regional. I'm sitting here and I'm not shaking like a dog because I'm nervous. I'm shaking because I'm anxious. I'm ready to go. I'm like, this is postseason baseball. Like, let's do it. We win that regional big time, going to the LSU regional. And I was a lot more calmer just because I'd already gotten the nerves out. So we get there. Then, you know, we play, I think it was that Friday game or whatnot. And, oh no, I'm sorry, it was Saturday. So we play that Saturday game against LSU. Come back from behind, win that game. That put some confidence under a lot of guys' belts. We already knew that we could beat them. But then we come in for that Sunday game and 14,000 people screaming down your throats right on top of you. You can't hear yourself think. You can't even hear yourself walking on the dirt. Like, that's how loud it is. That place was unreal. And then going to LSU, we had the most attendance. I'm sorry, LSU, we go to the College World Series and next thing you know, we got 32,600 fans in the second game of the College World Series. Highest attendance out of all the games that were played there. And it was like a major league loud. It's, you know, you go to a major league game, it's loud because people are talking and it's loud when people cheer, but it's nothing like LSU. It's nothing like those big SEC teams. It's nothing like Virginia Tech where it's a small stadium, but you have 100 students right behind home plate screaming down your throat. And you're just like, all right, man. So it was a really cool experience. And, you know, Omaha is what people make it believe, or yeah, it's what you believe it is. And it's just awesome. It really is.
So one of our former guests was a basketball player. He said that when he got hot, it felt like he was throwing a ball into an ocean because it felt like nothing could miss. You kind of get that, like you can catch a heat streak or a hot streak when you're at bat. And can you talk to us about maybe locking in and how sometimes if you get a good start, you know, it's going to be a great day for me.
Yeah, I think it all begins, you know, on the on-deck circle. It's your mental preparation before the game, and you know it's never too late to think to yourself, oh, I'm not prepared. You can get prepared on the on deck circle mentally. All it takes is a short little click, and next thing you know, you're hot. And that's a big thing that I've been doing lately, is just manifesting things into reality. Imagine myself doing this, imagine myself doing that. And then all of a sudden, me not trying to do that, and it happens. So, you know, I think as long as you sit there and you manifest things and you mentally prepare yourself, it's going to go a long way.
Yeah. So, building off the College World Series, you play in the Cape in summer 19. For those of you who don't know, it's the highest ranked college summer league. It's where all the big prospects go. All the best college baseball players are there up in New England for the summer. It's a really cool thing. Then you posted similar numbers in the Corona shortened season last year, 2020. But this year, 2021, you've had a big time breakout as a Corona shirt sophomore, slashing .333 batting average, .453 on base percentage, .813 slugging. That's crazy. 13 homers and 39 RBIs, both lead the ACC, hit a clutch 459-foot bomb to beat Louisville at their place last weekend. What adjustments, if any, have you made to lead to this big-time breakout in the ACC?
It's all the mental preparation. Like I said, I've been reading a lot about, you know, psycho-cybernetics and the mindset to baseball and just life and trying to be positive, because it's really easy to be optimistic when things are going well. But the hardest part is being optimistic when things aren't going your way. And I think the biggest part is, you know, whether you go 0 for 3 with a hat trick, you know, you strike out 3 times, you get the golden sombrero, you get a poncho, like it's going to happen. It's baseball. You're going to have slumps where you go 0 for 30. You're going to have slumps where, you know, you make an error or two during a game, or, you know, a little streak, error here, error there. Like it's going to happen. But the biggest thing is, like, you know, you're out there, and it's not even just making it about yourself. It's more so telling yourself, I'm going to do this for the guy next to you. And like I said, manifesting things is, I read a book, it's called The Power of Optimism. And I read the entire book. It's about a minor league baseball player who got drafted by the Red Sox, ended up in minor leagues, didn't get called back up after he got traded to the Royals in 2015 through some minor league deal. And he's in Double A, and he learns all about the mental preparation and all this other stuff. He goes off on a hot streak, hits 10 home runs within a month, gets called up, and then he ends up making the squad with the Royals. They win the World Series. He has a couple clinch like at bats, and he comes in and just does his job. They win the World Series. They beat the Mets. I'm like, dude, I got to look this guy up. So I go over, I look him up. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I can't find any data, no minor league stats, no videos, no nothing. I'm like, okay, well, I know the Royals won it in 2015 against the Mets. I know that. I know they played the Astros in this series, and I know they won this series. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. But the funny thing is prior to that, I've been using that book and learning from that book and taking it into my game and noticing differences in how I hit, how I feel, my mental preparation. Everything was really working. I go all the way back to the preface of the book where the small little label print is that shows where it was printed, the copyright label, all this other stuff. And right below it that nobody reads says, this book is not a true story. I had never been more mad in my life, but it's the fact that I was trying to do what this book was teaching and it was working. So the book and the author did exactly what they wanted to do. And it's awesome. So.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break with Matt and we'll be right back to talk about his future plans. We'll be right back. All right. So we are back, and Matt, we couldn't help but notice when we watch these games that you get hit by a lot of pitches. And I mean, a lot of pitches. As a Knoll, you've reached on a hit by pitch in over 7% of your plate appearances. It may not seem high, but that is high. Is that an actual skill you try to utilize, or are you just getting lucky on these, or just getting plunked on purpose? I don't know.
No, it's definitely a skill I try to utilize. We use those Evo Shield elbow guards. And in high school, I think I led the team or led the county or the district in something and hit by pitches with like 11 or 12 in a season, something like that. And it actually became a race to see who could get hit the most, because it was just funny. Guys were getting hit left and right. And, you know, here, anytime you can get on base, you take it, because you're trying to win games and you're here to win. You're not here for yourself. This isn't minor league baseball. You're not trying to, like, yeah, you're taking your at bat seriously, but, you know, it's not all about you. It's about the team and letting other people do the job. So sometimes we flick a little elbow out there. Sometimes we roll with it. Last year, I got called back twice, once against USF and one against UF, actually. And I was a little bit butthurt about it, but there was positive results in the end of that.
So you've always worn a pretty unusual number for baseball, and number 63. Is there a reason you wear that number, and does it have some sort of special meaning to you?
Yeah, the special meaning behind it is that nobody else wears it. So you go back, you watch the ACC tournament game when we played NC State in the, what was it? I don't know. It was a game that didn't really matter to us. We were already out of the tournament, but NC State was moving on. We needed to win that game in order to make the playoffs. So it mattered, but it didn't matter for the ACC tournament. And one of our guys came down and he's like, hey, the announcers want to know why you wear 63. And I said, nobody else wears it. He said, that's it? I said, yeah, nobody else wears it. He goes, okay. I have 100 text messages. I didn't know you love Leroy Selman. I didn't know Leroy Selman was your idol. This, that. I'm like, what are you talking about? My mom sends me a little video clip of the announcers talking during one of my at-bat. I'm like, dude, you've got to be joking. So they turned it around and they said, you know, I was a huge Bucks fan. I was a huge USF fan growing up and all this other stuff. And I wear 63 because of Leroy Selman. Like, yeah, his parents made him wear 63 because they love Leroy Selman. Get this, Leroy Selman retired before Nelson was even born. And I'm just like, the only thing I know about Leroy Selman is that he had a restaurant. It was damn good. That's it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But no, I wear it because nobody else wears it. And I started wearing that when I was 14.
That's hilarious. So, like you said, you've been having a big season. You're draft eligible this year. Have you been in contact with any pro teams in regards to the upcoming draft? And are you going to be declaring this year? Are you going to come back to FSU for another year? Because we know Corona's kind of made everything a little bit weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever comes my way comes. You don't talk to teams in the middle of the season. They let you do you. They don't want to distract you from what you're doing. And, you know, the draft comes around. If I'm lucky enough to get picked, we'll see where it goes. We'll see what round it is, and we'll see if the money's right. Unfortunately, that sounds terrible because getting drafted, it has to be about if the money's right or, you know, if you're a senior, like that might be your last shot or whatnot. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, man. So baseball is trying to get people our age to promote and make the game easily digestible for the casual fan watching at home. That's why John Boy is so huge, because he can make, even if you're not a baseball fan, he can break it down. He can make everything interesting, and the things you don't see when you're watching at home, he can break down for you. Personally, I love the pace of baseball. You can talk to someone next to you in between a pitch. You can ask them what they would call here. What would they throw here? Well, we just threw two curveballs, so maybe we should go high fastball. The intricacies, the mental aspect, the bated breath, waiting for a huge pitch or an at-bat in the ninth, you know, in the eighth. So what do you think could be done if you were Rob Manfred to say, hey, let's make baseball more popular when competing with the other juggernauts in American sports, such as the NBA and NFL?
It's not even just speeding the game up, because they've already tried doing that with the pitch clock. In college baseball now, if you violate like a 20, because the third base umpire keeps stopwatch, and the pitcher or the hitter could get a warning for, you know, a time violation or impeding the game, basically like a delay a game, and you get a warning. And after that, if you do it again, it counts as a ball, or as a hitter, it counts as a strike. So, I mean, they're starting to do stuff like that, but it's not even the pace of the game. Go over to Japan and look at the atmosphere that Japan has in the Japanese league. My next door neighbor, his brother-in-law is Scott Matheson. Scott Matheson used to pitch for the Philadelphia Phillies back then, and went over and became a star for the Emoria Giants as a starter. And it's just the atmosphere, what they have to offer. It's basically like, I mean, European soccer over there. People love it. So I think it's more so the things that you can incorporate at the facilities and the things that you can incorporate during the games rather than changing the game, because you can't change the game to make people like it.
So I'm assuming you don't like the proposed changes to like the balls and the bases and moving the mound back. They're trying out in the minors this year then.
Actually, as a hitter, I do like that, just because every pitcher, the new 90 is 95 and the new 95 is 100. So I think as a hitter, I like that. As a pitcher, I would not like that. Also, as a hitter, I do like the lower seams, because the ball travels a lot farther and it gives the pitcher a less advantage, considering, you know, these guys are just turning into different breeds. So I like it, but at the same time, I don't like it. I think the game should just stay how it is.
Gotcha. So you have any good clubhouse stories for us, whether it be at Calvary or FSU or any other place you played?
Oh, good clubhouse stories. Some I can think of, quite a few off the top of my head that are not even close to appropriate to say right now. I'd say postseason baseball, my freshman year, we were after practice one time, and all of a sudden I come walking into the clubhouse and I see trash cans set up like the drums. I see guys in cutoff shirts. I see guys with bats as guitars, and they're just jamming out, taking a video to Rockstar by Nickelback. And they're pretending like it's a new music video. So that was pretty funny. But otherwise, off the top of my head, I can't release those other stories right now.
So we always ask every FSU alum and current athletes, do you have any favorite spots in Tallahassee to go out? And where do you like to go when you do go out?
So, I mean, obviously you can't right now because we can't right now because of COVID and everything. We've been really good about that. So just general places that I like to go out to eat, the Lunchbox, Jim and Milt's, you know, Roboto, places quick and easy like that. But also, like, you know, if it's like a restaurant or if, you know, I do have time to go down to College Town and grab a quick bite to eat or post-game meal with my parents. Tin Lizzie's is really good. Madison Social, Koosh's, Cancun's is really good. They have really good deals on food and drinks. But yeah, that's what I can think of off the top of my head, yeah.
So for any other players in high school that may be in your position who are wondering, maybe I should, what route should I take? What kind of recruiting pitch would you give for Florida State baseball?
So luckily for me, I got recruited because I had done the winter camps. So I came to them. I was never one who made coaches come to me, and I never even went to them to get recruited. I went there my seventh and eighth grade year during the winter with one of my buddies who was in high school trying to get recruited. And I was just going back for fun, and then they ended up giving me an offer after that. So that was pretty cool. And then I played with the Burn, and the Burn said good things to Sully. So me and Sully talked for a little bit at Florida. And Florida State just felt like home. That's why I went there. But if the biggest thing that I would say is, you know, go to these camps when they become available, get seen, go to the coaches. You know, just because you email a coach, hey, come see me, doesn't mean he's going to come see you. He might not be at that tournament. You know, like, what if he comes see you and you're nothing of interest? Like, that sounds terrible to say, but it's true. You might not be that type of caliber of player for them. So I'd say go to them, make them see you, or go to the big tournaments, get on teams where they're going to go to these big tournaments. And I think that's going to help a lot with guys and recruiting.
Yeah, absolutely. So that will do it, man. Thank you guys again. Let's just do our quick sign-offs. Cam, do you have anything to say? Yeah, great episode today.
Yeah, great content. Thank you again for coming on, Matt.
Yeah, no, appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Yeah, Matt, I'm going to need at least one home run this weekend. Need it.
We'll see if we even get the games in. It's supposed to rain pretty bad up here this weekend, but we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, and then once again, thank you for coming on. I know you and Aaron played on the same team when you guys were kids and everything, so great connection there. Yeah, best of luck to the Noles for the rest of the season for baseball, and thank you again, Matt. Any last words?
No, that's it, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, and with that, we will conclude. Stay tuned for more episodes coming later. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you later. Peace. What is going on, guys? Thank you for listening to the entire podcast. Matt was great. Really appreciate it. If you liked this podcast, make sure to subscribe and to also give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever streaming platform you are watching this on. Really appreciate the support. If you have any questions that you want us to discuss, leave them in the rating. Thank you guys again, and we'll see you later. Peace.